G'day and welcome to this episode of Perspectives. I am in Port Douglas at the moment and feeling very, very fortunate to be here. I'm going to be joined today by a very special guest. Our conversation was just fantastic. Really enjoyed it. And it went in many creative and interesting ways. I'm constantly fascinated by how people think and their creative process and how they bring their creativity in their minds to life in their world. I find that fascinating. Her name is Christina Carlson, and you might know her as the extraordinary co-founder of Kiki K, which is an international brand of stationery stores that she created simply from a dream. She's an amazing woman. Interestingly, we found out during the podcast, which I think we're editing out, that we're neighbours. We literally live three houses apart, so we're catching up for coffee when I get back from Port Douglas. So she's the co-founder and creative director of the global Swedish design and stationery business Kiki K, which I'm sure you're familiar with. I know I've done lots of shopping there, and I've gone in there just to admire the creative, different creative elements and concepts that you can see in their stores. Their stores are across Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Hong Kong, and also selling online all around the world in 150 countries and counting. This woman is very inspirational. She crafted her dream business from scratch. She just had an idea when she moved here to Australia from Sweden, that bringing the Swedish design elements into stationery and fine stationery was a really untapped market. Up until then, the market, as she explains in the podcast, had been very much on price. So if you could discount, you sold more. She was the first to bring the concept of Australia to really quality and unique stationery products. I personally geek out on stationery. It's a whole thing. She works with her partner, Paul. He was a huge part of the success. You can hear about who supported her along the way to help her make it all happen. She's also, in the last couple of years, moved into other creative pursuits. So she's now got her own podcast, which is Kiki K Dream Life. She's got a beautiful book she's written, which is Your Dream Life Starts Here. She's turned that into a personal development program, with people joining her from all around the world to share their inspirational stories, share what their dreams are, just fantastic. And she has a dream to inspire and empower 101 million people around the world, just like you, to write down three dreams and go chase them. That's what she's all about, chasing her dreams and bringing them to life. So please, may I introduce the most beautiful, profound, creative, and delightful woman. Here is Christina Carlson. So where are you?
I'm in Melbourne.
You're in Melbourne?
Yeah.
So I almost am in Melbourne. I usually am in Melbourne, so we could have done it in the studio.
Yeah, and I was actually suggesting that because I'm very local to you. Yes. I'm in Middle Park, so that could have been. Yeah, oh, okay. I live on Page Street.
Oh, well, so do I.
Oh my gosh. So let's have a coffee. Because when the lockdown actually, I said, hey, I can actually come because I have a podcast as well. And yes. I find that when you actually meet in person, you just feel, and also you then got to get a connection for the rest of your life. I feel like that's like you create new friends in a, you know, more. But yeah, let's have a coffee when you're back. Because, you know, one of my dreams is to become a life coach. I don't want to practice as a life coach, but I do so much things that is kind of in that field anyway. And I've used life coaches over my whole, so we can talk about all that.
That'd be great. Well, just tell me about it. How do you see it being useful? Because you're a leader and.
One of my dreams is to become a life coach more so I can support better and have the tools to support people, especially when it comes to some deeper issues. So I meet a lot of people who, and support a lot of people who like to live their dream life. Since started my journey, I have talked a lot about, you know, how to start a business, et cetera, because I've been in business for a long time. But my biggest passion is actually, my dream is to inspire 101 million people to write down three dreams and then go and chase them. And in that field, there is just endless a possibility to support people to live their dream life in all sorts of different ways. And I think me becoming a life coach, which is part of my, you know, it's one of my 101 dreams. I love to have more tools to support people who really need it.
I love it. I was looking at your bio beforehand. I know I've done an introduction for you, but firstly, let's introduce to the viewers. We are connected because I was really interested in your brand. I have supported your brand substantially, shall we say.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, of course. So you are the co-founder of Kiki K. And for anybody who possibly doesn't know what that is, could you share a little bit about what Kiki K is? And then I'd love to hear more about your story. We'll dive in deeper. So take it away, Kiki K.
Yeah, thank you. I can actually start explaining how it started. So I came to Australia. I'm born in Sweden. I came to Australia. I met my partner, Paul, came over here, and then I was really lost. And I was really, and a lot of your listeners will feel the same, like really not knowing where, what direction to go in life. So I was kind of, I was whinging and complaining. And I was like asking my partner a million times a day, what am I going to do with my life? And one morning at 3 a.m., I woke him up and said, hey, what am I going to do with my life? And he was a bit over it, me complaining all the time, which is absolutely fair enough. And so he put on the light and he said, why don't we write down what is important to you? So this is what I call my 3 a.m. list. And on my 3 a.m. list, I had that I wanted to drive to work every single day and absolutely loving it, because I feel like even if we do get to live a long life, life is short, and I want to do things that I love every single day. Doesn't mean it's going to be an easy life, but I wanted to be really excited to drive to work. I wanted to have a business of my own, but no idea, no experience and no knowledge, no idea. And then I wanted to have a connection with Sweden. It was really important to me to be able to go home once a year. This is hard for some listeners perhaps to understand that this is before internet. So for me, that was like really expensive to call my parents. And you know, it was just a completely different world when I started a business. So it was important for me to have a connection with Sweden. I wanted to work with Swedish design because that's one of my passions. And then I wanted to make $500 a week. And that was based on paying rent, eating some good food, and then pay for a trip home. And that's kind of how my journey started. So it was all kind of me writing down my dreams at the time, which now when someone look at it seems very small, but it, for me, that was like, this is what I want, and this is what this will be my dream. And then when I looked, to make a very long story short, I looked at that list and looked at lots of different options. It did not happen overnight, but eventually, when I thought, I'm going to have my own home office, I'm going to have my own business. So I'm going to set up a beautiful space to start thinking about what I'm going to do. For me, I guess Swedish design and environment's really important to me. So for me to have an organized office and be super, you know, being inspired is really, really important. So I went out to buy some products, and back then, in my view, there was nothing that I liked, and there was nothing that was inspiring and quite simple. And
what year was this?
So this would have been
1925.
Late '90s. We opened our first store 2001, so probably a couple of years before that.
Because I remember the same experience. I started in 2003. An exact same experience. Wanted to go shopping. There was nothing. There was nowhere to go.
No.
It was blokey, clunky metal stuff that didn't resonate with my heart at all. The color pink wasn't even a concept.
No. Oh, absolutely. And it was a price-driven category. Now it's so different, but back then it was a price-driven category. So it was kind of all about just the cheapest, and the quality wasn't there. It was no, like, things you didn't want to put in your home office. And people probably didn't have a lot of home offices the same way that we do now.
True.
Yeah.
That's
so true. Anyway, so I just kind of
acquired the internet as well. And it was weird to have a home office because the internet in 2003 was just kicking off. I got my first website, my first page up, and I was one of the few pages in the space. I think it was two other pages in the space.
Yeah.
To have a home office just was becoming possible then.
Yeah. It's the world since then has just gone so fast. It's just so different now, and it's so exciting to be alive right now with all the changes. Obviously comes with its challenges as well. But if going back then, I I got quite miserable because I was like, this is so boring. And I was with the offers. And then I got a bit excited thinking this is my calling.
So you were going to get an office before you had a vision for the business.
Yeah, because I didn't really, for me to be in the right environment is so important. I'm a real visual person.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. And also, I guess I grew up in Sweden. I was used to have a lot of products that didn't exist here back then. Yes. So I probably came from a few different angles, but then I got a bit excited and I said to Paul, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to open beautiful Swedish design stores specializing in stationery and home office. Yeah. And I'm going to open stores around the world. And he thought I was crazy. Of course, he's probably still do. and I got a bit excited. And, for anyone listening, thinking about starting their own business, I think most of us think we need to know so much. It's really good to not know what you don't know, because if I knew what I had to go through to kind of first get it up and running, and then with the growth and all the things that we have to do as business owner, but also as humans to develop to our next stage, I don't know if I could. If I had that knew that in front of me, I'm not sure if I could even have faced that. Yeah. So I think, sometimes we just have to start before we're ready, and we have to just go with it. And I absolutely loved it. And the good thing is that I had no idea about anything. So I kind of just asked silly questions. There's no such a thing as a silly question, but for me, they sounded very silly because I had to really start from scratch, and also doing it in a second language. Swedish is my first language, so there was.
So why didn't you just import from Sweden their stationery products?
Yeah, I looked at that, but I didn't have any money. So to do that with another business, I certainly looked at that, and I looked at banks and even Swedish banks who knew some of the brands that potentially. Could have been an option for me. They just we don't know anything about Australia, and banks didn't know about the Swedish. This is before, the brands became global, unless they were like Nike or whatever. So I looked into that, but then it was just not possible because I had no money. So I thought, if I can just start. So when I actually started a business, I just designed a few products and got it up and running, and I had it all in my car.
Slow down. You just designed a few products. What does that mean?
I was looking at my needs first. So I was looking at what do I need in my home office space. So I needed folders. I need I'm looking at them now in front of me. Magazine holders, all the products that
stationery
I need.
Stationery tray, was a stationery tray one of your first designs? Because I could.
Yeah, it wasn't, because that's an expensive product to produce and also to design from scratch. So for me, it was I went from having no idea to go to S for stationery and Yellow Pages. And this is when the books were, two yellow Melbourne pages. And I went S for stationery and I went to see every supplier under S for stationery. And they all thought I was crazy and mad. And I was talking about a global brand and I was talking about my excitement. And then I just designed it with them. And obviously I worked with
them. Slow down. Yeah. So you designed it with them. So you went to stationery. So they were wholesalers rather than retailers. So that's
manufacturers.
Manufacturers. There was manufacturers of stationery in Australia still then.
Yeah, back then. Yeah.
Well done.
And then still are, but it's not as much.
There's this chick, not as many. There's this chick rocking out with an idea. I can't hear. This idea of designing some stationery that's never been done before, unless it's utilitarian and officey. And did you find someone who resonated with the idea? Because my first break was with Flight Center, and it was a cold call, and they resonated with my style. And that became the launch of the whole thing. Was there a particular manufacturer who resonated with you, or is it just somebody who was going to get the job done?
Not so black and white. I we laugh at this after, and they're not our suppliers anymore, but they used to think that I was really painful because quality was really important to me. So I used to drive on Fridays was my supplier day. So I used to drive up and look at all the products, and I always, had a high standard in quality. So they were finding me very annoying, which is understandable, but that's kind of what I wanted to, I wanted to do. So I don't know if they resonated with me, but I became one of their biggest customers in the end. And then as we were becoming bigger, we had to start sourcing overseas to cope, because obviously now we have lots of stores and selling online all over the world. So
you had a vision that nobody else around you was really seeing, supporting, because you're right, it was a price space. And by that, we mean a price means people are competing on price rather than on quality and uniqueness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's two different market segments for sure. And you were very uniquely going for this quality, uniqueness space that hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
So you were really just trusting you with this vision.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, it feels so long ago now, but you know, people thought I was going to compete with, you know, the big, you know, the big retailers or the big the big stationery brands, etc. But and they, or even newsagents, because back then people bought a lot of stationery from newsagents.
Yes.
And they like, are you going to become a newsagent? I said, no, this is very different. And that's why I was really focusing on having a retail store, because I felt like I needed, I'm such a visual person, and a lot of people are, and I felt like I needed to show it. So I kind of worked day and night to find funding to open the first store, and we just couldn't get it. So in the end, I convinced Paul to sell his house to open the first store at 2001.
That's amazing. Now, how did you, because I always think about the computer market where Apple went retail, standalone retail, as you did, but Dell and others went into other, they just sat their brand within on the shelf of other brands. Was that a tough one? Did you consider putting your concept on a couple of shelves of whatever the newsagents was back then? So Officeworks wasn't here then. Was that a toss up in your mind, Christina, which way to go with that?
Yes. So I did both. I actually, because I started while I was waiting to find money to open the stores, I did start wholesaling, and I also started selling online like really early, which was a bit of a, which was, you know, a difficult, like seems so simple now, but back then it was either you, when internet started, you were really good at the front end and it looked beautiful, it was like, you know, visual brochure, or you were good at the back end, but it was not a great face. And I wanted both. It was a bit of a challenge. So, and of course, anyone who could do both was too expensive. So I kind of got me, Paul, and another tech guy, and we did it ourselves. So it was a lot of learnings, a lot of work, and we just
back in the dinosaur day when you did this, building a site like that was I remember it's $15,000 to $25,000 to build the site you're talking about. Do you remember?
It was actually more. It was actually like I remember going to see a business, and I was so excited because I was like I was working morning and night to support myself for food and rent, and then I was working on my business during the day. And I remember being so tired. Like I went to a business and I was sitting on a high chair and they gave me a latte and in a beautiful office. And I was like, I love this. And then when they said, it's going to cost you $40,000, I almost fell off that chair.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I don't have that. So,
My first site was Tom, I Stand on Your Shoulders. He was $5,000. He was learning how to do it as well. And together we just busted something out. Just awful. We never had to deal with shopping cart. That would have been major back in those days.
People now
just buy an off-the-shelf shopping cart. They don't even know, but back then it all had to be built with a spec, and everyone was figuring it out for the very first time. So you had the vision for this brand. You didn't know if you were going to go into store, standalone store. You had to get an online shopping cart with a $40,000 tag and build a retail concept store. So the first concept store, I'm guessing, was more than that.
Yep. But again, we did it, you know, a shop fitted. We just couldn't afford it. So we kind of, you know, had to build a shop. Like it was just very, very different, but, you know, so much fun and learned so much. But I never worked in retail. So that was such a learning curve on its own right. Like, you know, and manufacturing and designing and doing wholesale. It was, it's actually exhausting thinking about it.
Yes. Everything you did was new.
Yeah.
Everything you did, you were figuring it out for the very first time. And everything you did, nobody else had ever done in this country. So it wasn't like you could turn to a mentor or follow the footprints of somebody else. Everything was you just backing yourself with an idea and taking the next step, the next step. One of the ways I look at it when I need to be brave is, as long as I can see the next step, I'm not going to worry too much about the next three. Yeah. I imagine you did a lot of that. Just get me to the next step and the next horizon line will present itself.
Yeah. But also I, even though no one had seen the concept, there were people in retail. So I reached out to a lot of people who'd done retail. I reached out to people who's done design. So I, even though it wasn't, I couldn't get help with exactly what I was doing. People had started businesses before, people had started retail before. So it wasn't rocket science in that way. Like there was a lot of people, and I've always been a big person to always ask who versus what, because I never had a clue. So I always said, who in this space can help me? So for now, all of us are still learning. It's an ever-changing world. So that will never change. And I always look at who has done this before, who is really good at it in this space, who can I, you know, connect? And it's always about win-win. So I'm always reaching out to people and then hopefully I can give something back. So, excuse me. So it's not, you know, it's about win-win with the mentorship that I have been lucky to learn from over the years.
And so where was the first store?
In Melbourne Central. This is there's another story. So this is when 2001, so 9/11 just happened in New York. So it was a very uncertain, and being obviously in Melbourne Central, which was Damaru. I don't know if you remember Damaru, the Japanese store, department store closed. It was like when we opened, if we were going to make it there, I knew we would make it kind of thing. It was like, it was not in a good, like it was, we didn't have a lot of, it was a tough time to start. And everyone's saying retail is really hard. So, retail is really hard. So I'm not taking that away, but everyone was saying, you know, Paul's friend was saying, what are you doing selling your house to open a store? So it was a bit of an uncertain and obviously really, you know, awful time of the year, of our time, what just happened. Yeah. So, not taking that lightly.
No. And how many concepts did you have in your first store? How many different concept types? Because now you go to a Kinky K store and there's concepts throughout. I just love studying your concept and the designs. I just love design. So Kinky K, I love going in and just seeing how you conceptualize colors, how you're playing with shapes, how you're playing with the themes or the character of the products. I can see many different characters. How many did you have when you started? And I hope to the viewers this isn't too geeky, because I really want to know.
it was very different back then, because I basically didn't have a lot of designs as such in terms of graphics, but I because it was all about the home office in the beginning, I color coordinated the store. So it was very, very minimalistic, very sleek. So you had a white bay, you had a red bay, a blue bay, black. So whatever you wanted to color to have in the office, and obviously you could mix and match. And then around that, I had different notebooks, and the kind of designs were mainly on greeting cards and stuff. And I had a girlfriend who was a children's book illustrator, so she did the first greeting cards and the first photo albums, so we kind of started really small. And because I didn't have a lot of money to do this, I also started by buying in other brands into the store of things that I couldn't make.
Interesting.
So
the way to fill the store was to bring in brands that were complementary but not competitive to with what you had already designed.
Yeah.
Wow, that's smart. And how much stock did you carry? Because I know there's a difference between anyone who started a store, there's a lot of capital investment outlay up front. You get the power of the discount the more you buy. So yeah. I imagine that notepad, the 10 you had on display, you would have had a truckload back there hoping they sold, because for those who haven't done this before, they give you huge discounts. It switches the moment you go from 2,500 to the next number up, and they get you over the 2,500. So that was been a big commitment. What was that like?
Well, because I didn't have a lot of money to invest in, I worked really closely with the suppliers to help me out. So I sold Division, and I sold One Day We're Going to Be a Global Brand, and you know, you can be part of this, etc. So I think that was, and also for a lot of excitement around doing something new, etc. Not for all the suppliers, but certainly some. So I worked really closely, but I was kind of focusing on getting the quality right. And even if I had to do small runs and pay more, I was fine with that to start with. And then as I grew, obviously that helped. And we actually then decided to, once we kind of knew that the concept was working, then we got some funding involved and then started to expand. And that's when I could start working on bigger margins and bigger suppliers and eventually becoming 100% us, our brand versus other brands. So that was a very exciting time.
Very exciting. So do you remember the moment or the space of time where this is going to work?
Well, I guess I always thought it would, you know, I'm an optimist and very positive. You know, I always believe that things will work out, of course. Wow. And I was also thinking, you know, we'll make some mistakes and we'll learn from it, as long as, you know, from the early day, because we had that really big vision to be a global business. And, you know, global business seemed absolutely almost impossible back then, because you know, internet you know, as it is now. But and that's why, you know, when I do my Insta lives and my Zooms, I have people from jumping on from all over the world, and I always have to pinch myself thinking, here, you know, and this is what I'm saying to everyone who's thinking about their dream life, and what you said before, you don't have to think about, you know, the end result. You just be like, okay, what do I need to do next to get closer? And things change so rapidly. So, and what I know now, I would have no idea that we would end up doing so many different things. So, so I think being able to think globally, but then kind of start small and just do step by step. So when we got an investor involved,
how many stores were you in by then? So you had the first store and it was working. Then you had two more stores in Melbourne.
Yeah. No. So let me just have a think here. This is going back. So we had two stores in Melbourne and one in Sydney. So all my mentors in retail said, you open in Victoria first, you make that, you know, it's much more cost effective. But I was the whole time thinking, if I'm going to open around the world, I have to make it to Sydney, because if I can't make it in Sydney, I'm not going to make it in Paris, in London, New York. So so we were very much into systemizing. So we said, if we can open in Sydney to see if we can do it remotely. Seems so easy now, but back then that was, very, very different. So that was kind of our way of doing it. Then we opened in New Zealand after a while, and we opened in Singapore, and that's kind of how.
And are they all company owned, or did you franchise?
No,
or
company owned.
You stayed company owned. So you would have had systems. That I think that's one of the things that differentiated me from a lot of people who started in coaching back then. The reason I was able to grow beyond me as a practitioner and become a global brand separate to me was because if I didn't backfill it, I hadn't done it. So my thinking back then, if I do it and I'm not systemizing it, I have no intention of expanding. Yeah. If I do it and I systemize it, I'm committing to expansion, because this investment today of time and boring detail and writing the systems, that's going to pay off for years to come. And I think that's really the difference that made the difference for me. And I imagine that was your experience. If Sydney could run using a checklist, endless yep. checklists.
Yeah.
You could then take it overseas and get to New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's systemizing. And I saw you had Michael Gerber on yeah. your podcast. I haven't listened to it yet, but I can't wait, because that book, I recommend that book all the time, because yes. that's how I systemize. I read that and I was like, systemize everything. And obviously in the beginning, as small business owners, we have to do everything. And, you know, when you do the org chart, your name is in everything, and that is absolutely everything. Fine. But the way I started was looking at, I was never interested. I didn't start this to make a lot of money. Like I had the $500 a week was my kind of dream. My most important thing was to love what I did. And I was so passionate about seeing new products, and I was so passionate about creating new things. And that was what I loved so much. So the financial side of it, I just didn't enjoy. I learned it all and I understand it all, but it was something that that was the first thing that I outsourced. I was like, I used to do Saturday bookkeeping, and I was like, I had someone to come in, and I paid, I don't know, $200 or something for her to teach me how to use Outlook. QuickBooks. in a fast way. And now, I'm a big thinker. I'm not a detailed person. I love detail, but I don't like doing it. And I was just like, when she walked out, I was like, I wish I bought that dress, because this money was tight. So I was like, I wish I bought a dress instead of spending this, because I have no idea what she was teaching me. So in the end, I got a bookkeeper. So I started like systemizing things, and obviously retail, there were so many people out there much better than, running stores, et cetera, than I was. So
did you read the 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing as well?
No,
I think for me it was I recommend it's by Rhys Trout. So for me, it was E-Myth, Michael Gerber, I Stand on His Shoulders, and Rhys Trout, 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. Because I knew nothing. I was like you, everything I did, it was like I was inventing it for the very first time.
Yeah.
These geniuses who put their lives into this knowledge, instant access to understanding of where I'm at and the pitfalls I'm facing and how to navigate them. It makes so much sense to tap into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm such an avid reader. I didn't read that. I had Paul, my partner, who was marketing trained. So I kind of had, I had that through him. So I didn't read that book, but I actually have that book, but I don't think I ever read it. I buy every book that I see, because I as you just mentioned, I just find it so amazing that you can get someone's life experience, for $20 and your time investment, and you take some of the things in and you implement whatever is right for you. And that's what I've done my whole life, and still do. Like, I'm very passionate about learning.
Where are you at now in your learning? Have you seen how it's gravitated and it's transformed? Yeah. What's your journey now in your learning and what you're bringing into you?
Yeah, so I'm fascinated by all the digital marketing. So I love learning about that, but I'm certainly not good at it, but I absolutely love that. But what I definitely love the most, and this is what when you do something for work that is like, it feels like whatever I do in my free time is translating to my work.
Yes.
And I think that's what I love so much. And I'm sure you would feel the same as a coach.
Yes.
Because everything that I read, I just feel like it's, and one of my values is sharing. So I always feel like, if I read a good book, I just wanted to share it with my Facebook group, or I want to, I wrote a book 3 years ago with my tools on how to create my people's dream life. So then I put that as a digital course. And now every time I read something, I'm like, oh, I just want to share it with these people, because I heard, she was talking about money. So I just read that. So I feel like everything that I do in my private life is then helping. Yeah. Which is what you want for everyone to have, because that just makes such a difference to live your dream life.
I'm finding everything my journey I'm having in my personal life is transforming my business as well.
Yeah.
So that journey is influencing and impacting that. And that creates its own ripple back to me, which helps guide the next journey. So I can see clearly 5, 6, 7 stages I've gone through in the last 20 years based on this exchange of energy. This is where I'm at. What are your thoughts? And that creates a whole bunch of new ideas and that transforms my thoughts. Yeah. All with these books and courses, I'm sure you're the same as me. Every course, I barely need to be sold to. If it's going to take me in the direction I'm thinking I'm ready for, I'm in, and I will devour it and love it. And I always get value. Yeah. I've never, ever not got something from what I've immersed myself in.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I, you know, I buy more courses than I can possibly ever do because I get so excited. and I just love it. I just love it because it's just, and you know, it's, you know, and I walk, you know, us being in the same area, I always walk in the mornings and I, this is where I, when, if I read something the night before, I'm like, oh, that's such a good idea. I should put that into that. Or it's just, it never stops, which is makes it so exciting.
I've got what I try to do is an hour in the morning walking, learning from a course. Yep. So I have Audible or an Audible course. Yep. Right now it's Michael Singer's The Surrender Experiment.
Yeah,
so
yeah, beautiful. Yes.
Beautiful work.
Yeah.
He keeps laughing at me because I'm not there yet. And then I do about an hour in a cafe a day learning something about business or learning something about the next level of transformation. And I find it's all translatable into my day and how we do what we do.
Yeah, I agree. I'm the
and
same.
My learning is learning one of your core values, because learning to me, learning and growing is core to how I am experiencing my world. What's your relationship with that?
Yeah, no, exactly the same. And, you know, it's part of my work that I did myself. Once I realized what my values were and they were aligned with my dreams and my purpose and my passions, it all kind of like, I used to feel a little bit guilty because I'm an introvert and I absolutely love staying home on Friday nights to read or do a course. Like I couldn't think of anything better. So I'm not a big fan of lockdown for obvious reasons. Yeah. But personally, like I just get so much more done. Like I can read more books and I go to bed super early. All that kind of stuff is a positive for me, but certainly not for business and certainly not for most people. But I absolutely love learning. And once I realized that my value, one of my highest values is learning in the personal growth area, then I just didn't have guilt anymore. I spend so much money on courses and books. And in the beginning I was like, oh, you know, should I really do that again? And now I'm like, this is my highest value. This is, you know, I'd rather do that than, you know, go on a big vacation or something like that.
Yeah. I can hit an online bookstore and I'm just enjoying the deliveries for a month or 6 weeks afterwards. And every single day it's Christmas for me.
Yeah.
And I devour them. I just, to me, it's not ever an expense to me. It truly has been the best return of investment I've ever made. In my first year in business, I did a whole $25,000 profit. I'm so proud of that. Every single cent went into investing in my education. My second year, I profited $250,000. I did the same thing, nearly all of it, except for some, as you say, the bookkeeper and the administrator went back into my education because I was just starting to realize how much I didn't know. But the knowledge was there. If I was willing to tap into it, the knowledge was there and accelerated my business growth and my growth exponentially. Was that your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's and the thing is that I do exactly what you do. In the morning, I do an audiobook or a podcast or something.
Yes,
and, you know, and I often laugh because people who are up, because I'm an early morning person, that when they see me, I always like have my little A6 notebook and my pen because I like to take notes as I think of it. And, and it inspires the whole day. It's just, I get so incredibly excited. And the same is like, you know, all I want ever for Christmas or my birthday is either a massage voucher or a book voucher. That's all I want and need.
Yes, I'm the same. So who are you enjoying on your podcasts? Who are you tuning into podcast-wise?
Oh, so many. I probably need to
look at. Yes, me too.
I mean, so many different ones. I probably need to look at my thing. I have a real passion on a side passion for health. So I listen to a lot of Dr. Stephen Cabral. I like Tim Ferriss. Oh, there's so many.
Do you listen to Sam Harris?
No, I don't.
I'll put you on to Sam Harris. If you love philosophy and how to think, and he's literally a thinker in public, and he has, what's his podcast, JP? Sam Harris, what's Sam Harris, isn't it? Making Sense podcast. Is that it? The Making Sense podcast. Recommend him, and he does wonderful thinking podcasts, and he thinks very beautifully and clearly. So he brings philosophical way of thinking about it to break down complex ideas, very much like Peter Singer does, but with a very broad range of topics. And he's very brave in public. I love brave thinkers. I don't quite know how they do it quite like that, but he's one of the bravest thinkers I know. He's up there with Peter Singer in terms of bravery. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, recommend.
I might have it. You know, it's one of those things where I'm going to have it. I might even have it because I add podcasts daily to my list. And and sometimes I go podcast, and sometimes then I go focus on audiobooks. So I do I do both, and then I do, you know, the courses. And because I'm now into putting my my book into a digital course, I'm trying to learn about that, how to service. My community the best possible way. So
wonderful. I definitely want to talk about that, because I think that's a wonderful shift in your energy, because you are clearly so creative. I imagine creativity is one of your core values.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it would need to be in like the top three or five. And did you have that before Kiki K, or and it just hadn't had a voice?
I think so, but I think, and I'm also like, I think creativity and entrepreneurship kind of goes hand in hand, because I've always been like, and I'm a hard, you know, I came from a farm and I saw my parents work really hard. So I always love hard work in terms of, when I say hard work, work that I love, like for me to, you know, I do with my course, I do a Zoom every Monday night. And for me, that's like the best Monday night I could have. And people say, oh, do you work night? And I'm like, well, you can call it work, but I just love it. And I'm sure you'd be the same. And that's why I like, you know, one day I love to do your course, because I think I can learn so much more to serve, especially when you know, because I'm a high level person, so often I'm like, let's just get on with it, let's just do it. But you know, sometimes you need to go a little bit deeper before we do that.
Do you find that you think so rapidly and confidently in the space of the unknown that sometimes people around you, I imagine, don't keep up with the you're already four steps in on the creative process and the consequence of it? Do you find others don't think at the same, you're nodding at the same place?
Yeah. Well, when you're in retail, it's a bit of I guess that's the excitement of, you know, now being online and you can react quicker. But when you're in retail, it's basically you work 6 to 12 months ahead. So that is amazing in some ways, because you're able to create things that, you know, people might not have thought of yet. But saying that, it's also, if I have an idea, I want to see it out next week, so I'm a little bit impatient. So but that is obviously changing with the world now, that we can do things much, much faster. I think it's great to be creative and being fast, but also I'm very impatient, so that's not so good for the team.
I actually believe your impatience with your creativity is why you built Kiki K. Because if you're too tolerant in business, you wait too long and you wait for things to be, inverted commas, right. Whereas impatient people, I'm certainly in the same category as creative and impatient, and I embrace my impatience, if that helps you. I embrace my impatience, because it's not a female, it's not a feminine attribute. I don't care. I know impatience means I will push through when others would hesitate. It means I'm going to find a way, and I'm going to find it now whilst others might be waiting for the situation to be more right, which I don't understand. And it means I'm not noticing as much uncertainty, and uncertainty isn't causing me that much stress, because I'm going to be impatient even in uncertainty. So I'd embrace it.
And I guess I do. I guess it's just absolutely. I mean, that's the, and you know, we, I'm, if you do like the, personality test, I'm a high yellow. Like I, you know, I'm a very, you know, I'm the visionary, and you need to work with people who are, you know, the opposite to make it all happen. Yes. So it's a good combination. So creating a team, but I certainly work much better with a team who are similar way of like being able to react quickly versus, you know, that planning, but we need the planning as well. So having both
desperately.
Is obviously.
Desperately. Yeah. I always believe for every impatient move I have, I need three people who can handle the fallout.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. I need someone who can plan the consequence of the fallout. And by fallout, I mean all good things. It means we're going to a new division. It means we're building a new space. It's all great. Someone to plan how we're going to manage that, someone to manage it, and then somebody to manage the people who are then going to be create opportunities for them because of my impatience and my creativity. Yeah. So I love the backfill as much as I love my pushing through. I'm the arrow. I believe we need as much as we can in terms of catching what the arrow is hitting. If that's a terrible analogy, but you know what I mean. I mean,
I do know what you mean. Absolutely.
So how are you at hiring? So you land two in Melbourne, one in Sydney, one in New Zealand. Were you good or crap at hiring at this point?
It took me a long time, and I realized I remember hiring the first person, and Paul said, how did you go? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, I think it was just me talking. I was so excited. And you know, I'm not good at that side, but I'm really, you know, maybe in the beginning I wasn't so clear, but I'm certainly clear what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And I leave, and I'm very open with that with the team. Like, you know, they know that I'm very yellow and a little bit crazy and pushing boundaries and an entrepreneur. And then I have the.
And when you say yellow, are you talking about the DISC profile?
Yeah, so the
you're a high D.
Yeah, so there is a, I can't even remember what it's called now, test that you can do that where you go. Yeah. So the yellow is, I can't even think of the name now. I'll have to find it. But
the eagle.
Yeah, so there's yellow and there's red is the people side, like people, you know, when you care about the people, you know, HR sits in there and, you know, people who really care. Yellow is like the big visionaries, like they just go 100 miles an hour. And then you have the blues, which are all about, logic and financial side. So you want to have a CFO in that. You don't want to have a yellow CFO. And then you have the greens, which are, and we've done this with the team and it's been so helpful, actually, because you can then communicate and I can say, hey, I have a really, and we always used we did this, which is quite recent with the team, we used to, I read, you know, many years ago, Edward de Bono's hats and I took one of the hats and it's probably not the right, but because I love yellow, I said, every time I have a crazy idea and the team has a crazy idea that might not kind of fit and might be not suitable at that time, we always say yellow hat. So saying this might be really ridiculous or silly or completely not right, but I just want to talk about a yellow hat. And so we as a team, design team and product team, we often say, hey, yellow hat. And then that's what we come up with, because sometimes if you don't say that, you might wait and you kind of miss that opportunity. So we always had that way of explaining things. So I always say yellow hat. I just have a yellow hat idea. And we all use that within the product team and design team. But then we have in the proper testing, there's also green, and the greens are the doers. So, I love.
You also need the blue hat. At some stage, you need to move out of yellow and get into the critique. Who's going to point out the flaws, but don't do that when I'm in yellow hat. Let me stay in the bubble of creativity. Save all your nitpicking for the second meeting, because right now my ego just needs to just go.
By
then, okay, now brace for impact. Tell me all the problems I didn't cover.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you need to do Edward de Bono's hats. That's like a black hat. That's where you look at all the, you know, what the downfalls are, etc. Yeah. So I'm gonna, but it's been since we did that as a team, it's been really helpful to kind of say, to, because sometimes I think people who are really blue find it difficult to work with the yellow sometimes, because we are all yes. about the big ideas, but you need the big ideas and then you need the yeah. logic from the blue. So it's kind of worked, has worked really well for our team so yes. far. It's quite new to us. It's been good. But the yellow hat we had for 20 years.
What's that?
The yellow hat we have had for the last 20 years.
So you were terrible, like I was at hiring. Did yeah. you delegate that, or did you persist and just have a turnover? What did you do? Because expansion relies on having reliable, committed people who believe in the vision. What yeah. did you do?
So in the beginning, it was really just to hire retail people. And because I had no idea about that, I used to work with a girl, Amy Bell, and I used to work with her in a side job just to make money to start with. And I just loved working with her. So I said to her, do you want to join? She never worked in retail either, but she had a good sense, and she's you know, more blue green. So it was basically me, her, and Paul.
Yes.
And we kind of, and Paul is much better at the hiring side. He's much more, he has much more logic and process, etc.
Right.
So, and then Amy kind of took off me and Paul. Like, if I thought he did a bad job in retail, I said, hey, I'm taking over. And then he's like, nah, I need it back. So we kind of, in the beginning, did whatever we had yes. capacity for, because I wanted to spend most of the time creating products, because that's what, you know, was really important, to have something to sell, obviously. So and then Amy took over the retail side, which came with all right. the, you know, people, you know, when you know, the more people you have, the more, you know, people issues and challenges you have. So so that worked really well. And she was with us for, and she's actually now back in my new kind of business, which is the Dream Life business with digital course, and she is running that with me. So we're back together, which is really nice.
Good. So that sounds like the puzzle pieces began to land as you yep. built up some steam. But I think that's important, because you not playing to your strengths wouldn't have given Kiki K the rocket boost it needed. Yeah, you needed to be free to focus on the create and the design, because that's yep. what's so unique about the brand that you've built. Amy clearly has a strength around that, which meant you didn't have to take up your chunks thinking about that. Yep. And Paul's role was more the system.
He was... Yeah, systems behind everything. He was great at marketing as well. So he kind of, you know, suggested me to go and see all the editors and stuff that I was terrified by, but I did. He had, like, it was a real team effort. So we kind of worked it out, and, you know, none of us, I mean, Paul had much more an idea, but, you know, in terms of the global expansion, we kind of just started and just one step at the time. And but he was much better at the systems, especially like the back end stuff with, you know, inventory and cash flow right. and all that. That's not my right. strength.
So that freed you to be the arrowhead that you are best at being.
Yeah.
How many stores did you end up being in at its peak before 20?
I think we at one stage had close to 120 stores in 5 countries. So we had stores in Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Hong Kong, and the UK. Okay. And what I find most fascinating is that we sell to over 150 countries.
Amazing.
And even I was like looking at my podcast stat yesterday, and, you know, when you have over 200 countries listening to your podcast, I just find it like, it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's just the way now that we can connect with like-minded people. So sometimes when we are in a niche, for anyone listening, thinking about their, you know, niche, it's sometimes difficult to find that in your own country or your own hometown, but you can yeah. find them completely globally. Yes. And that's the most yes. exciting by being, you know, being alive right now and being in business right now.
So then there were some challenges that occurred in, I think, as COVID came along in March 2020, and your organization had to go through some restructure.
Yeah. So that was no fun, as no. Most people can imagine. No. I think it was kind of the perfect storm, if one can have that. One, we were in the UK, so we had Brexit, which was a big issue for being in retail over there, to say the least. Yeah. We have stores in Hong Kong, and all the issues that Hong Kong was dealing with. We had bushfires in Australia, which seems so, I mean, that was not that long ago. And, you know, it's kind of, that was a big challenge, obviously, for Australian retail. And retail overall was tough. And yes. And all this happening in such a short amount of time. And obviously, we did some mistakes like all businesses do. So it was a bit of a challenge. It was the most horrific thing to go through.
It would have been devastating. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, but you know, the thing is that I was more devastated for everyone involved. So the team, yes. the suppliers, the yes. as an entrepreneur, I knew that I'll be knocked over for a little while. And I've, you know, and I can see that people can, you know, there's two paths. It's either go really depressed and go really down and leave it alone. And I certainly contemplated that because that would have been an easier option. But then I thought, I'm a very positive person in terms of I always think someone has it worse than me. So one of my friends who, was in retail, died about a couple of years ago before that. And I kept thinking he would love to have my issues right now. You know, and he's like, just to be here with his kids and his grandkids. Yeah. So I kept thinking about him, and I kept thinking about people who will wake up today and, you know, be threatened by life. Like I was threatened by, you know, losing the whole business. And I was like that. So if you, when you put, but I don't want to put it, I didn't take it lightly in any way.
No,
in terms of,
I'm not hearing you dismissive at all.
Yeah. Because
you had to keep going.
Yeah.
You had to find a perspective that kept you going. And that's we are meaning making machines. We have to create a meaning that allows our mental health to face the crisis.
Yeah.
Don't do it. And you did that. That's exactly how you serve yourself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I have Robin Sharma was one of my mentors. And he said once, it was one in my group who went through really difficult times. And I remember Robin saying, don't waste a good crisis. And and so I decided that there were, and because of you know, and then of course what I forgot to say is then COVID hit. What I decided to do is to really make the most of the crisis and support others, because I knew there'd be so many other people who had it much worse than me. So I decided to instead, I went quiet for a while really to think through it and work through it myself. But when people see things in public, you always deal with it much earlier than that. So I kind of, once things hit, I was like, I can either go quiet forever, or I can see this as a learning. And, you know, I know that I could do good in the world still, and then go to, you know, create better things because of this. So that's kind of the angle I took, and I started doing lives and supporting other people in the crisis, because so many people lost their jobs and lost, you know, I wasn't the only one. So so that's how I navigated that, and out of it came my new business.
Sorry, I want to talk about that. I remember one retailer, they lost both their businesses, they lost their house, their life savings because of COVID and the restrictions, not because of COVID, because of the restrictions, because their business was illegal. They've lost everything, and they spent 18 years building it up. And that isn't, if anyone's hearing this going, yes, but what about these other people? I'm not leaving anyone out in this. That's a personal anecdote I have, who's someone who's been traumatized through this and have paid a really, really big price. They're having to start from scratch with young children. I just think that is heartbreaking what some people had to face. I have been really fortunate to be in a space that's digital all the time. So we've been really, really fortunate in that. But there's plenty like your business and businesses like that were literally illegal for months. That is really, really difficult.
And it really is still really difficult. So, so you know, we have much less stores now, but, you know, half of them are closed. And, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are in business. If you don't have that, if you have the expenses and you don't get the cash in, it's it just doesn't work. No. That's the reality. Unless you have a money tree in the backyard. But most of us don't have that. But the positives, you know, I always look at the silver linings, and the positives is that I then, while I was waiting to work out what was happening next, I then thought, you know, I have school fees to pay. I rent and food and all those kind of things that we all deal with. So I started a side business at the time and put my book into a digital course and learned it all.
What's the book? Is that the book there behind you?
Yes.
Hang on.
Actually, I have it underneath so I can.
Because I'm in Port Douglas, so I couldn't get your book.
So it's called Your Dream Life Starts Here.
There it is.
See. And it's basically, I wrote this before all these challenges and put all my tools. So I do a lot of public speaking, and people always say, where do I start and how do I go from here to there? And I never had the time to really, you know, help people. So I thought I'm going to put it into a book. So I did that. And then not everyone reads and not everyone understands, you know, and follow through is much harder through a book. Sure. Work. So I put it on. So while we were going through all these, I filmed it at home myself, and
wonderful.
I now run that as part, but it's complements Kiki K perfectly, because all the product that we create is kind of all the things that I use and love. So it's kind of worked out really well.
Our vision statement for the Coaching Institute is live your dream. Yeah. So when I come into Kiki K, or I see that you are massively around living your dream and expressing your dreams, you have a saying around that?
Yeah, well, our purpose at Kiki K is to, through beautiful Swedish design, is to inspire people around the world to live their best life every day. So not just, you know, once in a lifetime. It's about living your best life every day. And we have four words. Dreaming it all, in my view, especially if you haven't found your calling yet. Like, if you actually start by dreaming and think, because we're so influenced by schools, teachers, parents, peers, social media, whatever it is. And I find that if you actually ask yourself, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? If you had all the money, the resources and knowledge, the energy and the health to do whatever you wanted to do in life, what would you do? So it's starting with that dreaming, like taking yourself out of your everyday life to really think about, you know, if I could create my dream life, what would that look like? And wonderful. Then we have a word with do. So you can dream all your life, but you have to take action, as we know. That's all about making your dreams a reality, you know, setting goals, and, you know, taking action, etc. And then the third word is enjoy. So I believe that, you know, you want to dream big and you want to, you know, work and take action and set big goals, but you also want to enjoy every day, because every day makes up your life. So you don't want to put your, you know, and when you start your own business, you work so hard, etc., but you also want to enjoy, and enjoy is also about re-energize yourself. So I never got burnt out. A lot of people start their own businesses and have big careers get burnt out, but for me it was self-care and self-love and all that kind of stuff that I find really helped me going through, you know, which has been a bit of a crazy 20 years or so. Returning 20 years this year in terms of the retail side, and looking back, I'm like, anyway, it's been crazy, but it's also been so much fun, and I enjoyed most of it. And then the last word is share. So I believe that, like, one of my highest values is sharing. So whatever I'm learning, that for me might be, like, for me a lot of things just for me make sense, but there's always someone starting out in life that I can share wisdom with. Wonderful. There's always someone less fortunate than me, so sharing, I feel, is part of our lives regardless where we are. So for anyone listening, where if you are going through some tough times, that could be your thing that you then support others with. So that's the silver linings in all the hardships that most of us go through. Regardless how amazing your dream life is, there are hard times, if that is in business or personal or family or sickness, that's just part of life. So,
and I think the price of having our dreams come true is to be able to handle the problems that are inherent within it.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. So what's the course that you do?
In terms of my digital course?
There's a book that you turned into an online course.
Yep. So it's called Your Dream. It's called Your Dream Life Starts Here. And it's basically my book in a digital form where I've done the videos. And when you join the course, you also get lives with me. So a lot of people need that support. And I can so relate to this because I love when you do a course, you'll be surrounded by other people doing the same thing, going through the same challenges and learning. So that's kind of evolving and I'm learning and see what's working and not working. So we launched it for the third time in May, and now I'm looking into putting it on all the time to kind of support people because there's so many people being lost and a lot of people, you know, losing their jobs or their businesses. So it's really good time in the most crazy times to actually reset and thinking about what your dream life could look like once you get through all that.
There's a lot of redefinition going on for a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
And if anything good can come out of what the world's experiencing, it is, if we're fortunate enough to have the space, be really careful what we say yes to moving forward. Yeah. It doesn't have to go back to all the yeses we were doing. We can
I so agree. And you know, and I really truly believe in all the hard times are the silver linings. And you know, there are lots of silver linings, obviously, in what we going through at the moment with all the lockdowns and COVID, etc.
You're fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I love chatting with you. Your journey's inspiring. You're so open about it. I'm so grateful for that. I know our viewers are going to love that as well. Is there anything else we should be talking about?
No, if there's anything that I can leave anyone listening with is that life is short, so don't wait. I think that is like, I often do an exercise where, I work out how many months you have to. So if you think you're going to live to 100 or 100, my dream is to live to 120, but really working out how much time you have left if you are fortunate to live that long. Yes. And that for some people would feel really, you know, kind of people sometimes get angry when I do that exercise because it's a really confronting exercise, but I much rather kind of being aware just gets me into action and just makes me saying yes to the things that is important, no to the things that aren't. And so if anything that I can leave any listener with is like, you know, and it doesn't have to happen overnight, but just ask yourself, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail, if you had all the money, the resources and the knowledge and everything you needed to create your dream life? What would that look like? It doesn't need to be perfect to start with, but just start thinking about them, write down your dreams and surround yourself with people that understand that. So if you don't have that, you know, what kind of groups can you join? What kind of courses can you do? What kind of people do you need to surround yourself with? Because you don't want to get to the end of your life wishing you took action. And I think, I don't, you know, maybe there's some age wisdom in here, because I when you are in your early 20s, 30s, you just think that, but all of a sudden you realize, gosh, life is so short. Yes. So that's kind of my main message, is like, do not wait. And even though if most people will go really through a very challenging time, it's a really good time to take some time and actually stop, you know, looking at other people's lives and watching the news every second and all those things. Really take some time for you if you are able to. I think that's kind of my message.
Wonderful. And stop waiting for the confidence to take action. Take action and earn the confidence.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Earn the right to say you're a confident person because you did something where you weren't that confident. That's how you get confidence.
Exactly.
But you don't feel that confident and you earn it. It's a muscle you build like everything else.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's so interesting you're saying that, because, and I think this is another good one for your listeners, is that when I did my, and I do this exercise obviously all the time, if I knew I couldn't fail, what would I actually do? And one that came up maybe 3 years ago was like, I would love to start a podcast, but because I'm not really, you know, English is my second language. I get, you know, and I do a lot of public speaking, which is fine because it's live versus a podcast. I just felt it's going to be recorded, it's going to be around forever. That was terrifying for me. But then I thought, if I knew I couldn't fail, that's what I would do. So I just decided to go for it. And I have never had any anxiety about anything in business, but I did have for my podcast and I often laugh. And now I think I've done, it will be close to 100 episodes soon. And now I love it. And the more I do it, I would love to have you on my podcast. I'll put that on my list and I'll be in touch. But it's...
You won't stop talking.
No, and it's amazing because you get to meet people that it's the people that I have on are people that I either meet or read their books or come across that I find inspiring in all sorts of different walks of life. So I think we have a lot in common. So I'm looking forward to have a human coffee with you when you're back.
Oh, definitely. I'll text you when I'm back down there.
Yeah.
And that would be fantastic. I really look forward to it. Is there a way that you would love people to reach out to reach you? Is it Instagram? Is there a handle? Where would you like people to go?
If there's some specific things about Dream Lives, it's the website is yourdreamlifestartshere.com. So that's
it's yourdreamlifestartshere.com.
Yeah. And then my Instagram is Christina Kiki K. And obviously we have the Kiki K on Instagram, but my personal one is Christina Kiki K. So people can reach me through there as well.
Right. We will provide to our viewers links to everything we've just discussed, including the books we both recommend. Is there a book you would like to recommend other than your book, which will be in the show notes as well?
So what we do at Kiki K is that if I find a really good book that I think is great for our listeners, we redesign the cover so it suits with our design. And then so the inside stays exactly the same as per the author's book. And then the outside just fits in with our collection so they kind of blend in. Otherwise, it's often...
wonderful.
So that's how we've done. One that I absolutely love, which is coming out with Kiki K cover very soon, is called The Wealthy Gardener. And it's a really good book. And it's I just absolutely loved it. And his name is John Sophoric, and it's a really beautiful book, and it's basically about a guy who decided to he wanted financial freedom, and he created it for himself, and then he wanted to pass on his knowledge to his son, but he knew that his son wouldn't be, he wanted to do it in a way that it was really resonating with him. So he started to write a story, like a fiction story. And then this book is half fiction, half his way. And it's all the things that you will love it. So once I see you, I'll, we haven't got the copy in yet, but I will give you a copy.
It'd be amazing. My book right now is The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, I love that book.
I love that book. I'm revisiting it. I did not appreciate or honor it the first time, and I'm ready now. So I'm honoring that book.
Yeah, and I think a lot of books are like that. So I read a lot of books that, you know, as we evolve, it's resonating. So there's a lot of books like that.
I will bring you one of my books when we catch up as well.
Yeah, I can't wait. I was looking at your site, I can't wait. So I'll look for it, and I'll bring you my copy as well. And I actually created a journal to go with it because I do so many books.
Oh, you did. I had that journal.
Exercise. So that's kind of all the exercises.
Yes. It's fantastic. So that's, I love
so
it.
When
I
you read the book.
So much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, really. What I went in and creator and as a strategist and admired what you did. I could see what I just thought was fantastic. When I'm on your podcast, still want to talk to you about your creative process.
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you are such a delight.
I'm happy to share.
Thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. I'm so grateful to you, and I know our viewers are absolutely going to love it. You're fabulous.